And here we go. So, given that, here we are. Welcome to Provoke, Evoke, or Go Home, or this is actually out of that grouping. It's the first one of the pair, Masterful Provocation. There's also Masterful Evocateur. But this is all about Masterful Provocation. And so let's get started. And by the way, feel free to let me know that I'm not worried about this being some sort of clean recording where people don't wind up inadvertently talking over each other. I know it's not intended, but, you know, I do want this to be a participative experience. So if you have a question, for me, the only questions that are out there are the ones that are unanswered. So bring it up if you're curious about anything. And let's get started. If you'll notice at the bottom, it says presencing change is not an option. And that's because the context for all of this is that our clients don't come to stay the same. If they did, it would be like somebody saying, I want to stay 22 years and 6 months and be experiencing everything I'm currently experiencing, and I want to freeze that in time. Can you help me as a coach? Not going to happen. It's not why they come, whether they say it or not. So despite, the best intentions of competencies and things like that to have an agendaless agenda, we always have an agenda. There is always one, and it is theirs. And their agenda is change. So here we go. Welcome to Masterful Provocation. If you're just here for more cool information to whip on your clients or to feel a little more powerful or something you don't have to apply to yourself, go home. Because this is not for you, if that's what you're here for. You know, my sense of it is that you're here because something in the conversation that we had at some point or another in our interactions or something you heard or experienced said that you recognize that there's something more that's available in the interaction between coach and client. That it's not about you. And at the same time, it does need to be, in its own way, applied to you in order for it to be not about you. So I'm deliberately being provocative up front by saying go home, because if that's what's, and you've attended courses and things like that where that's been part of it. People have come just to get the information so that they can get a nice, cool phrase or some technique to have the client think that they are somehow more masterful and somehow more powerful, and they're going to get this technique, and then they're going to use it on the client, and they're going to go, ooh and ah, and I want to hire you again. Or people are looking for a way to feel powerful, more effective, et cetera, instead of recognize that there is something that is calling to be accomplished, and it's in service to that something that we are there in the intersection between client and coach. And then there have been any number of classes, some of which I've taught, where I've had people, when I was teaching for other coach organizations, I've had people come and they think, oh, yes, this is something I'm going to use on the client, but I don't have to attend to it, as if that's going to really work. We also see that a lot in business theory in companies where, the leader will send a lot of his employees to a leadership training and development course and they won't attend. It's for them, but it's not for me. And they wonder why there's a disconnect. For me, the real recognition here is that great coaching, if one wants to label that because it's an external label, but if great coaching is to occur, it starts with great beings. And when I say great beings, what I mean is people who are free from the encumbrance of ego. They're free and clear from a lot of the residual emotional baggage that kind of imprisons us, constrains and taints our communication and our presence with people. And they are free to be so present in the moment that the only thing that comes out of their mouth is what's there to come out of their mouths. So I just want to check in with you all and see how that setup is landing with you. Anybody have any thoughts, feelings, or comments?
This is Sherry. I think the setup landed, and it started yesterday, and I was dreaming about snakes last night. I think it is about creating space for changes in our life, but you got to shed the old stuff. And that's what we're doing right now with clients with this whole January New Year and New You thing, and we're also doing that ourselves. So it's landing. Home run.
Good. I was talking with Molly earlier because she came a little early, and we were talking about the fact that we want the pure water of our coaching to come through us, like water coming through a portal or a tube. We want that to come through. We don't necessarily recognize that we have a whole bunch of gunk on the sides of our tube that is out of previous experiences, etc. Some of the stuff that used to work no longer works, but we're still carrying it around. Some of that's emotional residue of previous experiences in our life that's still there. And what happens is that when the water comes through, it taints it. So historically, what we learned to do was that we learned to put up barriers to it, like kind of manage it, get a creative workaround about it. But that means that we're allocating energy toward holding those barriers so the gunk doesn't come through. And then we're having to also have constant energy on monitoring to see whether or not there are any leaks. And then we also allocate energy toward the anxiety of what will happen if it does come through. You know, like, what will happen if my ego comes through in this moment? Or am I really listening from a space of service? Or is there a conflict of interest in how I'm communicating? All of that sort of stuff. Well, isn't it more effective or efficient to simply subtract the gunk? And then all of the energy being allocated to that stuff can be applied in a completely different way. It frees up our personal RAM, so to speak, to be more present, because we're not having to allocate RAM managing the stuff that is keeping us from being present. So we have a naturally enhanced and increased and effort-free presence with people. That's part of the principle that we're going to be working with here. So anything else rippling out there out of what I've just said? So I want to keep checking in with you to see where, you know, as a calibration.
This is Shirley. You know, what came up for me is just that we show up authentically and truly who we are. And with a clear, clean space, which means we have done and continue to be doing our own work on an ongoing, daily basis.
Yes, that's absolutely the principle. It's not something that's required by most coach training schools. There's a lot of lip service for it in some. Some do require it. I even know of a couple of schools that actually have an admissions process, meaning you have to apply. And I don't mean just send out your check. They interview you to see if you're going to be a good fit for what it is that they're up to, because they want to have the product that comes out of their coach training school to be one that is congruent with the principles that they're sharing. So this is the game. Let's take it a little further. Here's what we're up to for the next 9 sections. The context for masterful provocation, the key agilities, which are more than just skill sets. And I use the word agility rather than competency because of the two, I would rather be agile than simply competent. In fact, I would prefer to be masterful. But I don't know that there's really the masterfuls out there. You know, what are the 12 masterfuls? But these agilities, and I like the word because agility has a lightness and a nimbleness to it. And we'll talk about that. Then we're going to look at the 7 essential things to be poking at. Paradigms, myths, beliefs, perspectives, identifications, roles, and stories. And we'll go into each one of them and see how they affect how your client shows up. And the frame that is, these are the, you know, at least from my observation, the top 9 limitations and constraints that imprison people from the full freedom of expression of both their uniqueness and their optimal power in having accomplishment be a natural part of how they live. These are my promises to you. First, that I will deliver the best program experience I know how to do. And second, that I'll keep challenging myself to shift in whatever way necessary to fulfill that first promise. There's no guarantee that you will become masterful at this. You are the guarantee, not me. And this parallels my coaching promises when a client comes to work with me. Because in that, I promise to deliver the best coaching I know how to do, and then the second is to keep upgrading my coaching so I can deliver on the first promise. From there on out, results are up to the client. Because if people don't attend to the elements that are going to support them in experiencing a masterful provocation, there's nothing I can do about that. In the same way that for all of you, you can give brilliant coaching to somebody, but if they're not going to either take it in, modify it, use it to move themselves forward, it doesn't matter. And I'm sure we've all had that experience. Here's the ground rules. Show up ready to play, participate, be open to interaction. It's not, you know, like, don't force yourself. Practice what there is to practice. Feel into this material more than think about it, because that's when it becomes cellular rather than something you wear. If you don't get something, ask. Find your own way to integrate it that fits organically with you. And everybody has their own way. And one other thing that isn't on the ground rule here, which is your level of disclosure through any interaction is up to you. So if there's a place where all of a sudden you feel more vulnerable than you want to be expressing, it's up to you to share only as much as you feel like sharing. This is not the bare your soul against your will program. Any questions, Michael, about any of these?
Michael, this is Steve. I have a question about the last slide, which...
Yes. Let's go back.
No guarantee you'll become masterful at this, but you said that you also make this... Did you say you also make this statement to your clients?
Yes, actually, I do. I make this statement to my client that... And it's a version of this statement, which is...
Okay.
That I... The way I put it is, after I say the second promise, which is I promise to keep delivering on the first promise, which is to deliver the best coaching I know how to do, then I say, from there on out, results are up to you. Because I could deliver brilliant coaching and you could do nothing with it. And I could deliver average coaching and you could do brilliant things with it. And in truth, for me personally, over the course of my career, I've seen both. I've delivered what people...
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, because we've discussed the whole idea of, you know, whether you want to have a signed agreement. And I'm modeling after you, and I don't have signed agreements. This seems to be more powerful when you verbally say it to the client.
Yes. Because one of the things that happens with a signed agreement sometimes is people see a signed agreement and they do. We are so conditioned to a signed agreement by every bit of software we download at this point in life. Every contract we sign for Verizon telephones or Comcast cable or whatever it is that we do, we just scan it, sign, I agree to the TOS.
Mm-hmm.
We don't really take it in. That's why I make a point of articulating it. You know, so that way when people go, yeah, but I'm not getting the results I want, and I say, okay, so let's find out about that. But what I want to first do is revisit the two promises conversation. remember that? And then they go, yes. And I go, okay, so now, given that you're not getting the results, what are we looking at here? Because there is a, while it is a wonderful thing, and it, by the way, this is a provocative statement for a lot of people because they don't want to, they want you to, you know, basically produce the results for them. They think you're going to do that. And for me, when people have pressed that point with me, first and foremost, I hear the pressing of it when they want to make sure that I'm going to deliver the results. You know, with conversations like, well, what am I paying you for then?
Yeah.
I said, you're
yeah.
paying me for coaching. You're not paying me for results. But the other thing that I'll say is that I've found that when people want me to guarantee that they're going to get results, they're essentially asserting an abdication of personal responsibility. They're basically saying, do it to me. I've got nothing to do with it. It's all in your hands, coach. And I, A, don't want that kind of responsibility, and B, don't think it's appropriate. Because I can't guarantee results. I don't know what people are going to do with what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't want to take ownership in their own life for the results that come through them, there's nothing I can do with that. So is that helpful? Is that helpful to anyone else, by the way?
Very.
Yes.
Very. Thank you.
Yes.
You're welcome. It frees us up to be in the call present for what's being called to be in the coaching session rather than having a constant little monitor pop-up box inside our head going, is this going to make sure that I value add? Is this going to make sure that the results are delivering? Is this? We have some sort of like monitor checking device. I don't want that. That keeps my intuition from operating. It shifts me mostly into my intellect. I don't think that's the most powerful place for coaching to live. So, here we are, ground rules. The crucial context is that it starts with you, with that self-reflection, with you sensing, and as I talked about, with you taking a look and seeing what inside the mirror here, what inside the globe, is a kind of distortion. Some of the stuff that's inside people is what's called preverbal. We have experiences in our life when we're born and near birth and after, right after that, wherein the organism called you makes emotional decisions based on its experience that it doesn't even have language for. And over the course of these 9 sessions, you're going to get some tools to address that stuff so that you can basically shift the pattern of energy of that within you to a more neutral pattern. And then you see what you can see whatever it is that you want to put in that space that was occupied by an energy pattern that isn't completely serving you. So some of the work that we're going to be doing here, a good bit of it, is going to be on you clearing the space. The consequence of it is, though, that because people are coming to you for change and a shift in being, that's already the intention that's in place. You showing up with a clearer space, you're naturally going to respond with the level of provocation that's being called for by the moment and by the essence of their being that's seeking that provocation with you as the agent of it. Did that all make sense, or was that gobbledygook? Anybody get lost in that one?
I did. It just went fast. I'm trying to take it in.
Michael, okay. Michael, you're out in the woods. Can you come back on the path, please?
Okay, so your client comes to you. That's okay. I smoked a bowl before I came. Your client comes to you because their intention is to get a shift or a change of some kind that's important to them, even more important than the situation they present you with. Okay? They think that what they're coming to you for is the particular challenging situation or scenario. That's just the game board they're playing on for the deeper transformation they're seeking, whether they're conscious of that deeper transformation or not. They come to you for that. They're just entering the door called, I have a problem with my boss, or I want to grow my business. That's just the door they come through. Once they get in the house, there's a whole bunch of other stuff that's available. So now, because that intention is already there, the more the space of you is clear, the more the provocation that's necessary to come through you can come through you naturally, because it's actually the one that they're seeking. They're using you as the person who is the bearer of it, almost like going to the oracle at Delphi. You know, asking the question of the gods, so to speak. And you happen to be the oracle through which the provocation gets languaged. But it's because they're seeking it already. They're wanting you to be the bearer of the message, whether it's a question that you bring or a direct communication that you bring. They're wanting you to be that bearer of that message, and they want it to come through in a powerful and provocative way. Does that clarify it? Anyone still
yeah.
lost?
Are you saying that they want us to be authentic?
It's more than just authentic. They want you to provoke them.
Okay.
Even if they don't know consciously that that's what they want. Because provocation is about stirring up, stimulating. They want that. They don't want you to come, they don't come to you so that you can put them to sleep. They want to be stirred up so that they can get the change and shift that inside them is seeking to be changed and shifted. You know? And it takes some courage to do provocation. This is part of the context. Because we have to be willing that this may be upsetting to people. Now, we get permission up front in the interview session that says, you know what? There may be times where I provoke something. I may challenge a view that you hold. I may challenge a belief. I may challenge some sort of system I hear you operating from. Is that okay? And so I'll get that permission up front in the interview and agreement session, but we need to be willing to go there if that one comes through us and we go, oh, I can't say that. That would be too challenging. Oh, that would insult them. Oh, A, I don't know that, really. Or we might go, oh, but they might fire me if I really put that out there like that. If we're not willing to be fired, what are we doing there? Just keeping a client? Who's that in service to, if that's what's happening? You know, the courageous coaching of a masterful provocation says that I am truly here in service to what you want me to be in service to, which is your transformation. If I'm not going to be here, if I'm just going to help you clean out your garage, and I'm not going to challenge what has you cluttering up your garage every 6 months after we go through this process, then what am I doing here? So I get permission up front, and if there is one that I feel like is truly in a particular session, I have an intuition that it says, it's useful to establish context for what I'm about to say, then it's useful to get permission again. Revisit the permission. Say, you know, I just have this intuition, and I have this question. It may be really challenging for you at this moment in time. Is that okay? What I'm doing then when I do that is that I'm checking in to see, do they have enough sense of their state that says I can hold this challenge at that moment in time? And if they do and they say no, I say, okay, that's fine. We don't need to go there today. Because I'm not living inside them, so I don't know all of what's at play. They might be feeling a little bit more fragile than in that moment than normal.
But that's probably like rare, right?
Very.
Where they're very rare when you, because usually when you ask somebody, now I want to ask you a question, and it it might be sensitive, whatever. And most of the time, people will just say, yeah, yes, but
yes.
But even though it's rare, when they say no, you're asking it for those times.
Absolutely. You're asking it for the rare times, and you're also asking it, though, the embedded application of that is that they are taking ownership in either case.
Ah, okay.
See what I mean? So if they say yes, they're taking ownership of where it goes from there. If they say no, they're taking ownership of where it goes from there.
Mm-hmm.
In both case, they have ownership. So once again, you're not doing it to them. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, and you're showing up as being genuine, authentic, provoking, which is what they're paying you for, what they're paying us for.
Yes.
But the other thing, Michael, that I'm hearing is that it's their agenda, and they get to choose. And they get to choose at what level they're going to participate. And for whatever reason, they just may not be ready at that moment to dig into that space.
Absolutely. And it could be because it's been a suckier day than they had actually wanted to acknowledge, and by you asking that question, they recognize that it's been a suckier day and they're just not up for it. Mm-hmm. But at the very least, they are choosing. And that's a very powerful place for them to be, is for us to keep returning ownership of their experience and their path to them. Any other questions or comments here?
Michael, if you were to Google this, I would say it's to provoke transformation.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
That's about it. I mean,
and
that's as simplistic as that's what we do as coaches.
That's what some of us
do. One of the things that we do.
It is what some of us do.
Right. Some of us, yeah.
Yeah. And what we're going to do is we're going to examine exactly what provoke really means. Because, and we'll see that as we come up. We're going to look at these key distinctions, provocation versus manipulation, compassion versus sympathy, and shift versus change. I'll go to the third one first. Change is what happens mostly from an external behavior pattern. Change is what people do when they change the foods they eat in terms of wanting to lose weight. I'm going to change the foods I eat. They haven't shifted into the being of a person who defines their wellness as a critical part of their life. They may not have shifted into a person who sees that nutrition is simply one aspect of that wellness. And they may not have shifted into a being that says, this is my priority, versus it's an intellectual idea that says, I want to change this because I'm feeling fat in my genes. I want to change this. And I noticed this after getting triple bypass surgery and then going into the rehab center. I noticed that there was a shift in being in terms of how I related about, not just about my health, but about my well-being. And it wasn't that I was busy trying to prevent or preempt a heart attack, it was that I recognized that I hadn't been completely playing fully with my physicality as I might. And while I was there, I would see people who would come and they would walk on the treadmill, but they were basically, as we call it, phoning it in. They were only doing it because the doctor said to, and they would just as soon be sitting at home eating potato chips on the couch. One guy was, this is the more bizarre thing that I had, is that he was addicted to pickles, which are highly salty. And so when they went to monitor his signs each time that he came in, he goes, yeah, I had a whole bunch of pickles, but I didn't want to give them up. And so he hadn't made a shift internally that said, I'm more about the vitality of my life experience than I am to the things I put into my body, you know, to the things that I use to comfort me. So, yes, there's a change of behavior in certain ways, but people would always rubber band back. The other thing that happens when someone shifts toward health and well-being, that their life is now going to be defined by the vitality of their experience, now all of a sudden a shift encompasses an entire realm of new behaviors, not just what happens nutritionally, but how they manage sleep, how they manage emotional input, what kind of other forces, levels of stress, whether or not they do have different kinds of exercise. You know, there's a whole philosophical piece that attends shift in the being versus simply changing the behavior on the surface. And when we change just the behavior, whether it's in business or in a personal thing, you can almost guarantee that it's going to rubber band back. If we get the shift at the core of the being, which is where the transformation happens, the essence of someone, it's sustainable, not from a point of view of discipline and constant reminder. It's sustainable because it's now an organic expression of the human being to do so. That's that distinction. So that's a distinction we're provoking around. As part of the provocation, we have this distinction between compassion and sympathy. And I put it this way usually when I look at it. Compassion is, I feel for you that you are feeling that. Sympathy is, I feel what you're feeling. Now, the second one actually isn't possible. Because I can't feel what you're feeling. I'm not you, with all the nuances and shades of meaning that any feeling, I don't care what the label is we put on it, will ripple through your being with. I can't feel that. And when somebody says, I know what you're feeling, I'm going, no, you don't. You don't live in me. You don't know how this resonates to all of the minute corners of my being. You have your version of it, but that's your version. It's not me. And so I look at it as the distinction, the imagery, is quicksand. Sympathy is jumping into the quicksand with somebody in an attempt to feel what they're feeling so that you create a kind of affinity by it. Now, how helpful is that? Now the two of you are in the quicksand. How helpful? Compassion is standing on the bank and going, wow, I really feel for you. That quicksand has to be scary, and I'll bet it's deep, and I bet you're full of anxiety, and you have no idea what to do. You know, how do you want me to be with you? What do you want me to do with that? What kind of help do you want? It's not detached and not feeling anything. And you can feel that there is pain or anxiety or suffering going on, and you notice that, but you don't think it's yours. You feel for where they are in the scenario, which then gives you the opportunity to throw them a branch, throw them a rope, you know, stick a ladder out there, whatever it is to help them get out. But if I'm in it with them, then that's exactly the point. I'm in it with them. Compassion always allows me to be, also allows me to be provocative where I might not in sympathy. Because I'm going, wow, if I say that, that'll upset them. They're already upset. That'll upset them even more. Maybe not. Maybe it's exactly what needs to be heard at that point in time. The last one is the distinction, and this is a really powerful one, between provocation and manipulation. Provocation, in the simplest form of it, is revealing what's already there and causing pain or constraint. It's not causing pain or constraint in order to get someone to move. That's what manipulation is. So it is the pulling back of the curtain, like in the Wizard of Oz movie. The guy is already there. He's not this big image that he's pretending to be. We're putting him back to getting the recognition of who he is, and then go, oh. Instead of all the smoke and mirrors and the flashpots of who it looks like Oz is, it's this guy. And if he's uncomfortable being that guy, but pulling the curtain back and revealing that he's that guy, he now gets to see how uncomfortable he is being that guy. Now he's in a position to shift. So you're not, I think of it this way. Imagine getting a sunburn. And you don't know you have it. And someone comes up behind you and touches you on the back and goes, wow, that's some sunburn. And you go, ow. Now, did that person cause you pain? Or did that person simply make you aware of a condition that was already there that was causing you pain? And now the fact that the sunburn is there and you're really aware of it on a fully visceral level, now you have the opportunity to take some action on it. Now, you'd find out later, one way or another. But just because you can't see that your back is sunburned doesn't mean it isn't sunburned. Manipulation would be noticing that you have a sunburn and deciding, I'm going to make you aware of it, and I'm going to smack the daylights out of you on that sunburn. Two completely different intentions. One is about awareness. The other is about power. So let me check in with y'all. How are we doing? What's becoming clear at this point?
This is Herminia.
Yes.
Michael, I like your analogy of provocation and manipulation.
Mm.
Thank you very much. It just illustrates it very clearly how provocation really works. Thanks.
You're welcome. Because it's a really key distinction that we have, because a lot of people see the word provoke and they go, you're going to try and make somebody feel something. No, I'm simply going to help you become aware of what's already there that you may not have been looking at. An example of that, for those who haven't heard this story, was that at one point I was coaching rock bands, and I was coaching, you know, this one band, and the lead guitar player, who's 19 and knows everything, said, you know, I don't really think you have anything for me. I said, okay, that's interesting. And inside, you know, I recognized that in order for this whole band, since he was a player, to move forward, you know, I needed to get his attention. And I said, okay, that's interesting. Okay, so if you know everything already about the music business and how to succeed, how come you're not famous? And he said, well, You know, when he started down his path of excuses and said, it's because I haven't had the breaks yet. I said, okay, so if you know everything about how the music business works and how to succeed, how come you haven't set up the scenarios wherein you get the breaks and meet the people you need to meet? And each time he came back with something, it was, so how come this? How come you didn't? How come this hasn't happened yet? And eventually he had to give up. And he was just about at the edge of that. And the last piece, and some people may find this harsh language, but it worked absolutely in the place. I said, so can you afford the arrogance of thinking that there's nothing out there that you could learn that will help you succeed in what's most important to you? And he said, no, I can't. So now we not only had his attention, but we had his internal awareness and recognition that his attachment to protecting himself as one who knows, out of fear of the kind of input he might get, it was absolutely already blocking him from getting where he wanted to be. So anything else resonating out there?
Was that a shift at that point?
Inside him?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
What I thought.
Yeah. He went from being a victim of the music business and his circumstances to being a willing participant in his own development and learning path and in working with the band together instead of in isolation. He shifted who he was in that moment. And, I've reported to some people, that was was one of the cover bands I was working, a band that makes their living out of playing other people's music in bars. They don't have a record label or anything like that. And they went on to become the most successful cover band in the Philadelphia, New Jersey, Maryland, Delaware area, grossing for a cover band in a bar, grossing $1 million in a year. Without a label, without an original song being played on the radio, they made $1 million. Not just one year, a number of them. They were extraordinary in their performance. So anyone else, any other questions about any of these distinctions? We'll continue to revisit them here and there. Okay, let's rock. And here we are. This is the truth behind provoking. Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. There he is. I am the all-powerful Oz. Now, sometimes provocation is simply telling the truth of what's already there. In fact, Oz himself provoked transformation in each of the people who came to him. Because at one point he pointed out that in order for this to happen, the lion had to have courage. It was already there. In order for, this to happen, the Tin Man had to have heart, or it wouldn't have happened that way, and he wouldn't have felt what he felt. In order for this to happen, the Scarecrow had to have brains. And in those moments, there was a shift into the ownership of something that was already there. He pointed to that it was already present, but they had simply not been experiencing it because of the paradigms of perception they'd been living from prior to those moments. That, too, is provocation. This is just a playful way of distinguishing between provocation and manipulation. You know, people go, masterful provocateur, I have the power. I can make the shift. No, you can't. If the shift is available, it will show itself in both the timing and the nature, according to the moment. and according to what's being sought by the client. Trying to force a shift is more likely to have backlash than anything else. That's like standing out in the backyard, planting a tomato plant, and yelling at it because it hasn't grown tomatoes 2 days later. Now we're going to take a look at the perils of I'm right. This is the other part of the provocation piece, which is we lay the provocation out there with the, one might call it humility, but awareness that it may not be absolutely accurate, either in the language or in the timing or anything. The way you know whether or not your ego is hooked is whether or not you present a provocation and then you feel like you have to keep defending the rightness of it. Masterful provocation occurs in the absence of attachment. Attachment to our point of view, our sense of self, our things, our history and self-image, our methods, our beliefs, our information, data, and experience. Doesn't mean that we don't have these. It doesn't mean that we may not present it. But if we're attached to them having to become like us, in order for them to succeed, we're stuck. We are chained. And then we basically have simply transferred our chains to them. So any questions or comments, thoughts? What's rattling around out there? How's this all going?
Oh, I was just talking away on mute.
You know, I have to tell you, I have said some of one of the things that I've thought were probably the most profound things ever, and I found out I was on mute.
I know.
And
I thought,
I'm sitting over there going, wow, that was deep, and they didn't say anything about it.
I know. I thought, well, that really landed. well, I mean, I just love all of this information because I see myself in a lot of this, and I see how I interact with so many other people and with my clients, and some of the things that are roadblocks in my communicating or being with them because of some of the things that we've gone over. But it is a lot of information and a lot to take in.
Cool. That's why we have recordings.
Yes. Perfect.
Yes. So in this moment in time, if you were to point to a pivotal piece that if it would shift it, would dramatically change those interactions you're talking about, what is it?
This is Sherry. To me, it would be being in the present, being detached from any outcome or anything that's buzzing around my head, but to just be right
cool.
Minute.
Great. Who else?
Can you say the question again?
Yes. If you were to point to the pivotal shift that would dramatically change your interactions with clients in this direction at this point in time, what would that shift be?
I would point to my information, data, and experiences.
And what needs to shift there?
work with clients where I have nothing, where I know nothing about their business. And I only have one client like that. But what has to shift? What has to shift is for me to have it once I feel that once I start thinking about all those experiences and information and data, I've got to switch into Teflon coach, where it slides off of me and I put it back to them.
Okay.
And don't get all caught up in all my thoughts.
Okay. Can I offer something?
Please.
Okay, I'm just going to hear a shift that that is intuitive, and I don't know if it's absolutely accurate for you.
Okay.
But you'll get the spirit of it, I'm sure, and so you may modify the language to fit you.
Okay.
The shift that I hear is the shift from that your value is your experience and data and information to that the power of your coaching is born out of your presence in the moment and what comes through you despite all of that experience and data and information.
Can I ask you to rephrase it, please?
Yes, and I'll put it differently. Your value to a client is not what you have acquired and accumulated over time, especially not intellectually. Your value, and this is the shift that I hear to live from, your value is that the essence of you is an absolutely rock-solid core dedication to them having more success and a better life. That's your value. The means whereby that occurs is not your information. It's the energy that you presence with that intention.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The energy that I presence with that intention, yeah.
Yeah. It isn't that you know stuff.
Right.
It's that you have such a dedication to them having a better life that they shift out of the interaction, and you could probably be frickin' talking about baseball.
Yes.
Do you follow me?
Yes, I get it.
And it may look like it's your business experience. It may look like it's the information you've acquired or techniques that you've done, but it's got nothing to do with that. It's that essence of who you are and that dedication to their having a more meaningful life in ways that are important to them that is what truly makes the difference. When you shift away from the information database to owning that power, you can talk about baseball and that will make a difference.
You just become immersed in their flow.
You bet. Because I have to honestly report that for not only you, but for everybody on this call, all of the information about how to do stuff and get stuff done and solve problems is actually probably the least valuable part of you. Because that information is all over the internet at this point in history. It may have been useful when Archimedes was around, but it's not now. All you have to do is Google the word how to complete your goals, how to get success, and you will find hundreds of thousands of entries of information about how to do that stuff. The paradigm I'm poking at this moment in time is the essence that what you have acquired is where your value lives, and I'm poking it and asserting that who you are and the energy of your essence is what's most valuable about you. just want to check in and see how that's landing with anyone out there.
It squashed me.
Well, and so my question is, so if I in fact know that about myself, then how do I share that with others in a way that they get it as well without my feeling like I've got to do so much work?
Well, I'll put this a slightly different way. It's you in the information that makes the information valuable. The information itself is of no use by itself. And so how do you do that? You show up, you be you, you be attentive to what is called through you, not from you. This is the other thing I'm going to poke here, is that most coaches think of themselves as a container. Meaning the stuff comes from you to someone else. And we poured stuff into our container over the course of our life. And that's what makes us interesting or valuable. No. It is what you have done to what looks like a container, but is more a portal. It is the degree of attention to your own personal development, your own subtraction of the gunk that gets in between you and the flow of what is to be spoken in the particular moment. That's where your work really has been. And so you pay attention to what the moment is calling for. We stop thinking of ourselves as a container. We start thinking of ourselves as a portal through which inspiration pours. And then we don't rely so much on our intellect being our value because it's the least part of us. I'll go back to one other thing here. Some of you may have heard me speak about this before. Before you had information, before you even had the words or the language for information, you changed the world by your presence. When you came in as a human being, that pattern of energy did not exist in the world before that moment. You absolutely changed the world. The rest of the world had to accommodate that new energy pattern in the world, in the universe, because it wasn't there before. In the same way that when you have a crowded room and somebody else walks in, the entire room adjusts to the new presence, and it will adjust again when you leave. It's the most significant impact you've had in the world and can have. You change the entire universe, and that is without a single piece of information. So everything that you acquire as information is a great way to bridge the gap and keep the mind busy long enough for your presence to have the impact on people that it can. Yeah. So you show up. You keep clearing the space. You show up. You do what you do, but don't think of it as that your information is what's valuable for you, your process, your model. It's not. That would be like saying that anybody who says the words, I love you, is valuable without the presence that informs those words. I mean, look at what happens when a baby comes in. People's lives are different. The baby hasn't accomplished a damn thing yet, except show up. And look at what happens when they giggle. They change the mood of everybody around. It's probably one of the most melodious sounds on the planet. They don't even have words. They don't have concepts and models and techniques, but they change everybody. That's the essence of you. You do that by your presence, not by the information you have. So again, I'll just ask that question. How's that landing out there?
Do you hear me, yeah?
Yes.
You have just said so many profound statements. It's unbelievable. Thank you so much. They're very deep and they're beautiful. Thank you for reminding us, reminding me.
You're welcome. I sometimes think that the primary job of the coach is to remind people of who they truly are. When they connect with that, then what they're seeking to accomplish kind of becomes pedestrian and ordinary. Who else? What's rattling around out there?
This is Herminia again. If I may just add, when you talked about the presence,
mm-hmm.
Just another analogy or an example would be, you know, a house. When you
mm-hmm.
go into a house, it could be full of life and there are children there or there are people there so happy. And then when you leave the house, the environment changes.
Like, yes.
It becomes like a sad, lonely place. Yeah.
Well,
and
a house is just a collection of information. When it is first built, until it's inhabited, it's got no presence. It's got no energy. It's just data points of construction. You use these kinds of beams to do this. You use that kind of beams. You build a foundation. You do this, etc. And all of that stuff is information based on people's experience of what builds people's houses and what supports them and all that sort of stuff. But you walk into it and it's empty until you fill it with presence. Does that help
exactly.
the distinction a little bit, Steve?
Yes.
Cool. Yes, there was someone else who was about to speak.
And I have to exit.
Okay.
I've got a call.
Yep.
I'll see you.
Yeah,
next
we're
going to
be on for about 11 more minutes, but you can pick up the recording. And thank you for coming.
Excellent. Good, great stuff as always.
Thank you.
Talk to you next week. Bye, everyone.
Okay. Bye.
So, Michael, what's coming up for me is, can we talk about this essence? What is this essence of who we are?
It's a very difficult thing to talk about in terms of defining it. It's more something that we sense, feel,
mm-hmm.
rather than have language for. Meaning, you know that you've had experiences that have so felt like you that it is, there's a coming homeness about it. You know, you felt like you in that moment. There's something that is so synchronistically, synergistically complete in that moment, you just go, ah, this is me. And then there's a bunch more experiences of, this is close to me, but not quite me. But that essence is your uniqueness. That each one of us was built absolutely one of a kind. And there are many ways that we can get at it. And I go through a number of those kinds of things in terms of Masterful Evocateur about how to get at that essence. Right now, we're after the essence that supports provocation. And that is one that is absent of all of these attachments. And what I have been poking, well, let me ask you. For those of you on the call, what's been poked?
Uniqueness.
Uniqueness. Okay, cool. What else has been poked? Yep, that's true. What else has been poked?
Well, for everyone, it's different. I mean,
well, exactly.
It's to me, it's authenticity also,
mm-hmm.
to be your true self, you know,
yep.
to live your true self.
Yep. Cool. Anything else that's been poked that people have experienced?
Well, for me, I think I'm going to this place of. I mean, we can talk about uniqueness and authenticity, but there's something about the energy and the space that I bring or that appears in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like Bill Clinton. Everyone who's ever had the opportunity to meet and to be with him said that he has so much charisma that when he walks in a room, even if there are people on the other side of the room, it's almost like everyone turns around,
mm-hmm.
look in his direction. And so I'm just really loving the thought about just reflecting on this and what this really, what's coming up for me.
Cool. That's great. One other thing I've been poking, and fairly severely, I would say, is I've been poking the identification with our expertise as our value. Does everybody recognize that?
Mm-hmm.
There's a construct out in the world that says what our value is what we know. I've been poking pretty hard at that one. So that's just both an experience of it as well as some information about it. Let's keep moving and see where we go now. These are a lot of the elements that are in there. You know, we talk about the agendaless agenda, but often these are the background elements that need to be subtracted. Show what I know, keep them as a client, feel important, be liked, feel needed, get results, prove my value, get them to agree with me, impress the client. I can honestly tell you I don't give a crap about any of that. I only show up to engage in the way that it appears for me is the way to engage. I've even started presentations saying I'm not here to have you like me. That shocked people. Because they tend to see speakers as people who are trying to get people to like them. So that they'll believe in them. So I don't care if people like me. There's something more for me to do. These are some things that we're going to be subtracting because they operate on a purely internal level. What they're called are frictors. This is my word for it. Tom Stone, in his work, The Power of How and the Core Dynamics Coaching, we call them core dynamics. I've called them factors of friction, and Tom and I have had a conversation about this. I, at one point, helped Tom create a core dynamics coach training program. And these frictors are factors of friction that impede or slow down one's natural ability to progress rapidly. I say natural, meaning the assumption is it's already there and it's obstructed or interfered with in some way. It's just not operating at maximum capacity. So if you were trying to make a boat go faster, one of the things that most people would do is, wow, I'll put a bigger sail up or I'll add a big motor on it, which may or may not stress the hull, contingent on the structure of the hull. However, if it's got a bunch of barnacles on it, and you scrape the barnacles off, it automatically will go faster because there's less friction. You might remove some other obstacles that keep it from being a little bit more aerodynamic. We're going to work more from a subtractive process than from an additive process. We're essentially working from the principle of Michelangelo and the David. There's already a David inside there for you, for the client. There's already a David inside there. There's already genius there. A magnificent sculpture. What we're going to do is chip away all the stone that is not the sculpture. Does that sound like fun?
Yes.
Kind of makes it simple too, doesn't it? These are some of the tools we'll use. And I will actually set up, I know that I have this particular URL, but I will give you a different one for all of these. In fact, I will send you the MP3s of these. These are some of the tools that we'll use from Tom Stone's book, The Power of How, the gap technique, the C technique, the core technique, the weight technique. And I will demonstrate those with people over the course of this time in subtracting the frictions. And you'll get pretty good at it using it for yourself. So, questions, right here near the end. And, you know, pick your question. And I'd like to hear at least one question from each person. You know, pick the one that hits you, or fill in the blanks with one of your own.
This is Sherry. What I see important to practice is remembering and thinking about the energy of my essence and to just be with that.
Great. If you're working from a subtractive principle, what would be beneficial for you to subtract in order for that practice to be easier?
Getting rid of my never-ending to-do list and knowing that there's always tomorrow.
Yes. Yes. Recognizing that, you know, on your deathbed or at your funeral, the things that people are going to remember aren't going to be, you know, Sherry, she completed her to-do list. That's what I remember about her. Cool. Who else? Who's next?
Well, I've already spoken about this thing about my essence and the essence of others. So, you know, that will have to be, that's what I choose as well. And I think for me, I'll go back up to the agendaless agenda and really explore, show what I know, keep what I do to keep them as a client, just question the feel important, being liked, feel needed, get results, prove my value, and get them to agree with me. I think I can go down that whole list and really check in with each of those and question myself about how I'm engaging on any of these or all of them.
Great. I have an invitation for you, and that is to consider what the through line thread is that might have those agendas show up as the behavioral strategies. What's sourcing all of them as an expression? And, you know, if you can examine that and reflect on the deepest place you can find from that, that would probably be useful simply because you could subtract that and knock off seven with one blow, so to speak. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah, so if you can shift where the being is coming from that sources those things in the first place, they'll disappear. Cool, who's next?
This is Herminia.
Yes.
For me, what challenges me about the essence is that, or what I have to remove, I suppose, I meant is remove the doubts about my ability as a coach and what I really know.
Mm-hmm.
But just know that I am full within myself.
Mm-hmm.
As an essence.
Yes.
That I could coach anyone, and that I don't have to be liked, or I don't have to do any magic.
Yes, exactly. And that's part of the shift between portal and container. When we perceive ourselves as container, we perceive ourselves as the people who are doing the coaching. So we start to wonder about our ability to do that. When we perceive ourselves as portal, we recognize that the coaching is coming through us, it's not of us or from us, in which case we have what one might call the divine, the energy of the universe, pure awareness, the source, the force, I don't know, God, you know, call it whatever you will. It's coming through us. So it's coaching, and we're the vehicle through which the coaching occurs. We don't worry about our ability when the coaching is just occurring through the guidance of something that appears to be beyond the human form. Does that make sense?
Yes, and even beyond that, it's more of there's spiritual. There's a lot of spirituality involved in the process.
Absolutely. For whatever that word means for people. Cool. Molly, you want to wrap it up?
Yes, I. For me, it's making a shift and not a change.
Hmm.
Because change is temporary.
Yep.
Shift to me is permanent.
Yes. Yes. Or at least permanent for
where
now
I am at the
in
time.
An evolutionary sense.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So I invite you to examine, revisit places in your life where you lived that distinction, where there were times where you changed and times where you shifted. So if you re-examine those ones and you get a recognition, you can attach the recognition via an experience you've already had. Because all of these things we're talking about are grounded in something that already exists in all of you. You've already all had the experience of shift versus change. You just may not have flagged it that way. So if you revisit the places where you go, you know what? That's where I really shifted. You know what? That's where I only changed. Now I see what happened. And just kind of anchor it in that recognition. And from there on out, you've already identified your next steps, however odd they may be, whichever perspective, new perspective they may give you, whether you're walking up and down or sideways or upside down. And that's all there is. So anything anyone wants to say to feel complete for today? Or needs to, and if you don't need to, that's fine.
Well, this is Herminia. I just would like to acknowledge you and thank you for what you bring, everything that you bring to this teleseminar. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Yes, this is Shirley. I want to thank you as well. This has been, there's a lot here, a lot of opportunity here. And I just so appreciate the opportunity to be in this space with you and the other people and to be on this journey together.
Cool, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Yeah, we have exactly the right group for this. The way I always know that is by who shows up. Cool. Anyone else have anything you want or need to say in order to feel complete today?
It certainly is.
My family is waiting
it?
For dinner.
Your family's waiting for dinner. Okay, we'll see you next week.
Thanks.
And Molly,
so,
there
bye-bye.
Was something there for you?
Yeah,
bye.
I was going to say, it certainly is a different philosophy of life.
Yes. Yes, not your average bear.
Not your average bear.
Okay, bye all.
Okay.
Bye. Thank you.
Bye. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye, Herminia.
Okay. Bye, Molly.